Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com. For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events, sign up now for TBISN.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBILaw.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Hello, everybody. This is Kim in the Midwest, where we're having some beautiful Indian summer, I think they used to call it. Not sure if that's still politically correct, but it's been really nice weather out, and I'm very grateful for that. My convertible is on limited number of days. Bill, are you able to hear me?
Yeah, I just hear you just now.
Okay. I'm sorry, everybody. We had a technical difficulty, but I was saying welcome to the Midwest, where we're having a beautiful Indian summer, and my days for the convertible are limited, I fear, but today was a beautiful day. I was just going to say, and I'm sorry, I had my mic muted, but this show is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics, and survivors share their experience, strength, and hope. Bill, do you have on a radio, a computer?
No, I'm just on my phone.
Okay, I'll be right back. We got a little bit of an echo. I'll be right back. I introduce topics and survivors share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. Tune in, stop in, and call in. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Some nights we'll have a featured guest, and others we will introduce a topic of recovery, encouraging callers to join us in the discussions. We often have music in the second half hour of the show from some great indie musicians. I want to remind everybody out there that Brain Injury Radio is on seven nights a week, same time. The number that you can call in to listen or to make questions or comments is 424-243-9540. Also, well, we've added a new platform, which many of you know. So now Brain Injury Radio is going on for up to 5 hours a night. Your original 10 hosts are still here at 7 o'clock Pacific, 10 o'clock Eastern, and now 2 hours before us, we have some shows added. Tonight, Well, one other thing. For those of you on the computer, you're probably seeing some pictures rotating. And a couple of weeks ago, one of my guests was Sergeant Major Pepe Ramirez, and he runs a facility in Colorado Springs, Combat Vets Helping Combat Vets. And by the sponsorship of three nonprofits, the American Military Family, Rocky Mountain Hyperbaric Institute, and Project Sanctuary, they are able to treat veterans with some, less conventional types of treatment that have been shown to help immensely with brain injury recovery, but some of the things don't pay as well as prescription drugs. In any case, they're allowed, because of these three organizations, the sergeant major is able to treat veterans at little or no cost with things like the hyperbaric chamber, EMDR, and the pictures you see flashing are three flags that were used on the 4th of July celebration in Iraq 2003 to raise money for those nonprofits. And so I'm fielding some bidding on three of these flags, and if you would like to bid on one of the flags, you can find me at inaflash.org, www.inaflash.org. There's a tab that says contact the author, and that will send an email directly to me. I hope you guys will help participate. As we're knowing and hearing right now, they're cutting back on some benefits to veterans. And it's wonderful that a place like the Sergeant Majors can exist in Colorado, so we want to help these three organizations. I also want to thank my show sponsor, Lash Publishing. They're located at lapublishing.com, and I'll be typing these things into the chat room. I had the pleasure of getting to meet my sponsor, Marilyn Lash, the owner of the firm, just last week. And it was funny because she is in North Carolina, and Lash Publishing publishes only brain injury-related material, whether it's for the professional or the survivor out there. And they approached me about sponsoring my show, and I was humbled and flattered at the opportunity and never thought I would meet her. And as it turned out, they did have, they were here last week for a conference called Help on the Home Front, and it was for wives of veterans who have come home with TBI and PTSD, dealt with things like compassion fatigue. And Marilyn and Marshall Waddell, who I interviewed a few weeks ago, along with one of our new hosts, Dr. Kelly Orr. Anyway, I got the opportunity to meet Marilyn in person and our new executive director of the Brain Injury Association here in Nebraska, of which I didn't know we had one until all of this came up. But anyway, it was a real pleasure meeting Marilyn, and I want to remind you all, one of the other pictures flashing on your screen is of a young boy with a football helmet on. And Lash Publishing launched a magazine back in April, was the first. And there's six magazines a year. And if you go to their website, lapublishing.com, and you look in the left-hand corner, the left-hand column, just a little ways down, it says Brain Injury Journey. If you click on that, it'll take you right to the subscription page, and you can pay to have a paper magazine sent to you. But if you scroll down, you'll see for your free online version, click here, do that, just give it your email address, and you'll be able to get current, past, and forward issues of brain injury journey for no cost. So I highly suggest it, and October should be coming out any minute. The one pictured there is, August, September, I guess, and that's where yours truly has an article, and also one of the past shows for FinalSalute.inc. So I think that's most of my housekeeping for the night. I'm really excited tonight to be able to have the guest on that I am. Some of you might have had the opportunity during the day to see on the social networking pages my guest, Bill Keck, riding his horse, Wild Bill, into the picture. And, you know, something funny, before I bring him on, and I'm sorry for doing this, Bill, but earlier on one of the social networking pages, somebody misunderstood. We do that a lot here at Brain Injury Radio or in our brain injury audience, and one of those things is getting some confusion. And the person said, you know, clearly you have your own story and your own TBI, and we're going to talk about that. But obviously that mentioned your past occupation. And somebody said a person can't die of drinking too much. And so I know he might have some stuff of his own, but before I unmute him, because we had a little feedback on the line, that person forced me to do a little homework, and so you're all going to get subjected to just a little of it. My first source here says alcohol use is present in 40% of accidents that lead to traumatic brain injury. Here's a shocking statistic. A recent study found that 40% of people who visit the emergency room with a head injury have alcohol in their blood. That is, 4 out of 10 people who incur a serious brain injury were drinking shortly before their accident. Another study found that 67% of people suffering from head trauma in the United States showed some signs of alcohol use, while almost half were legally intoxicated. Here are a few more statistics about alcohol use and traumatic brain injuries. Alcoholics are up to 4 times more likely to suffer a brain injury than those who do not suffer from an alcohol addiction. 30% of head injury victims have a history of abuse. People with a history of alcoholism in their family are twice as likely to suffer a head injury as those without a familial link to alcoholism. Those who suffer a traumatic brain injury while under the influence of alcohol have worse final outcomes than those who are sober at the time of their accident. Not only does alcohol lead to more accidents and traumatic brain injuries, it also hampers patient recovery both in the immediate days and weeks after an accident and in the months and years to come. Patients with a history of alcohol use or abuse will often turn to alcohol or another form of substance abuse after an injury. In some cases, those with brain injuries are struggling with impulse control, behavioral problems, depression, and anxiety. In other cases, brain injury victims could simply be bored, frustrated, unable to work, or physically disabled. All of the above factors can lead to a return to alcohol dependence or a new dependence on alcohol. Unfortunately, drinking alcohol has damaging and even dangerous effects on those with the history of head injury, and many medical professionals are unsure of how to treat the issue of living with a brain injury and an alcohol addiction. Really, I'm going to bring my guest on in just a minute. CNN says every year about 2 million people, and they said this, by the way, a couple years ago, and so I think we're closer to 2.7 6 million, but one of my fellow hosts can correct me on that later. People in the U.S. experience traumatic brain injuries, and 56,000 die and 80,000 are permanently impaired as a result. Alcohol plays a role in 40% of car fatal crashes, and half of the patients hospitalized for trauma are intoxicated at the time of the injury. And I have just reams and reams and reams of research that say that alcoholism isn't good. One thing I'm going to mention where alcohol does kill is something called Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome. And because my guest is recovering from a traumatic brain injury and it's rude to keep him waiting any longer, for those of you who want to stick around, I will read you a little bit more about how alcohol can kill, particularly people with brain injuries. And with that, I want to say a couple things about my guest. He's someone that I've been close with, a close friend who I don't see very often for probably 15 to 20 years. When I first met Bill, he was big and imposing, and you know, I kind of had to look at him sideways. He was working at a homeless shelter, and I was doing some volunteer work and some other work at the same place. And I wasn't so sure. Bill looked like he could have been kind of scary when I first met him, but the better I got to know him, I thought, what an irony to be such a tender, caring, spiritual, loving teddy bear of an individual when you can have that bad Leroy Brown demeanor. Got to know Bill later over the years, and I was shocked. We hadn't seen each other, or if we had, this hadn't come up, haven't been in touch for the last couple of years. And last week I was at a luncheon, and one of the people mentioned Bill, and that he had been in a terrible accident and that he had suffered a brain injury. And it was a regular meeting for me, and several people who know what I do on Wednesday nights turned around and looked at me. And first I was just horrified that he might, well, after being a host here for a year, I was scared to death of what the consequence might be, and hurried to get a hold of him. And then I assured him that it wasn't just to get him as a guest on my show, but what an amazing way our lives have paralleled over the years. And Bill is just a really wonderful person. Love him to death. And we had been playing some phone tag about whether or not he was going to be able to be a guest on my show tonight. And so that's why I called the show, What the Heck, Keck? Are you there, Bill?
I'm here.
Well, I'm glad that you're here. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Excited to be part of your show tonight. And like to be, hopefully I can be of some help to people that have had brain injuries and that have had chemical dependencies or alcoholism. So I'll just kind of share a little bit of all that whenever
good.
You want me to get started.
Okay, yeah. Well, what I thought we would do is, first of all, in case there was some confusion in the group, the reason why I played the video is, first, it was out there and I thought it was cute. But the video was made a couple of years prior, and Bill's book was written a couple of years prior to his brain injury. So what he did for a living, and I'll let him give you some detail about that, how he came to that position, how he created the Miracles drug and alcohol treatment portion of our local homeless shelter. And some of the background in the work that he did prior to his traumatic brain injury, which he just suffered, and he'll tell us when, in the last couple of years, and then proceeded to have a car accident in May. So that's a lot of territory to cover, but he's got a very colorful life, and this TBI is not the first time he's experienced recovery. And one of the reasons this show is called Recovery Now is because I believe that we're all recovering from a little something most of the time. And it's something that can be very isolating. And when it's isolating, it's dangerous. We need peer-to-peer support. We need to know that we're all pulling on the same oar. And when we're feeling not strong enough to carry on, and we all go through that place, the others help lift us up as we do for them as we go through the process together. And that's one of the reasons that I'm here. It took me 17 years writing a book and becoming a radio host to ever talk to another brain injury survivor. And I remember, and then I'll shut up. I know I keep saying that, not doing it, but I remember about 8 years ago is when Bill wrote his book, and I remember being at a book signing and just looking at him and thinking, God, he's accomplished so much, and I've always wanted to write a book, and I was just in awe, and I still have my autographed copy of Bill's book. But I had no idea 8 years ago that I would be called upon 2 years ago and write my own book and go on to be a radio host. If you would have told me that 8 years ago when I was at Bill's book signing, I would have laughed out loud and laughed you out of the room, because that wasn't in my idea of anything that was ever going to happen. And so my belief is that God puts these things in front of us, or however you want to look at it. Stones are laid down in front of us, and we either go willingly or reluctantly, but there's people along the way that are holding a lantern to help keep us on the track. And Bill's been one of those people for me, and I was horrified that he had this traumatic brain injury. But we all know, if we're honest, that, and I can read you statistics all day, and maybe he'll tell you some. This is going to be, the interview will be about his story, but within his story is a culmination of all the things he's done, and he spent a couple of decades being a substance abuse counselor in a homeless shelter. And so he had to have made some observations. The last thing I want to do before I turn over the mic and really do shut up for a little while, unless I have a question, is I want to thank you for your service. Bill served two tours, in Vietnam, in the U.S. Navy, and I always like to acknowledge our veterans and thank them for the freedoms that we have today. And also, I have a lot of wounded warriors and guests that participate in the show, like the one that I talked to earlier, and veterans groups that I support. And so Bill also has some experience as a veteran. So with that, Bill, maybe you can just tell us a little bit about how you came to the place where I met you. A funny story, I got another host. I know, I just won't shut up. I got somebody you can't see, Bill, but in the chat room, there's a fellow host who's from a small town in Milton, Indiana. And he always brings that up about Milton, Indiana. It's a small town out there. And right now, Bill and I are both in Omaha, which is the biggest city in Nebraska. We have more people here than the whole rest of the state put together. But Bill wasn't always from Omaha. And there was kind of a Milton, Indiana, and where Bill came from, kind of a parallel. So I wanted you to give us just a little bit of your background. Tell me about the Keck Boys and where you came up, Bill, and then what brought you to the point where I met you, which would have been about the time you started your job at Sienna Francis House.
All right. I'll be happy to. First off, I want to just say how grateful I am to have this opportunity, because I've always liked helping people, and I've been blessed to be able to help people pretty well, but I never had a brain injury until just past year, 15 months ago. And so I kind of knew what brain injuries were, but really, unless you have one, you don't quite understand. And I'm a recovering alcoholic and addict. In fact, in next month, November 22nd, I'll have 35 years of recovery. But I was a hardcore user, hardcore alcoholic, hardcore drug addict, and pretty insane. I fought a lot, lots and lots, and got into it's just an insane lifestyle. But I was blessed, and in fact, I just wrote my mom a card today and telling her how blessed all of us kids, I'm the oldest of 10 kids, and just how blessed all of us are to have had mom and dad for our parents. My dad died about 14 years ago now, and we all miss him terribly, but at the same time, he's right there with us all the time, and we've been blessed, and mom's still going strong. And
but you were born out in a small city, so you said a family of what, 10, 8? What was some ungodly number?
I'm the oldest of 10 kids.
Oldest of 10, and how many Keck boys were there in this small town?
Well, there's 7 of us boys and 3 girls.
So, what town did you grow up in?
I grew up in Grand Island, Nebraska, and before that, Columbus, Nebraska, but Grand Island mostly.
So the Kecks were well known then. Were they all big boys like you?
Yeah, we're all weightlifters, and I pretty much taught them all how to fight. Dad taught me how to fight, and I taught them, and I taught them a lot of other bad things, like getting drunk and getting high and being crazy, but it's kind of amazing once I got better. It looked like everybody else got better.
Funny that.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, before I sobered up, you know, there's 5 of us boys that were, you know, at times together drinking or whatever, and most people liked us, but if they didn't, they probably just stayed away. But I grew up, I used to think alcohol never caused me problems until I was in my 20s, but once I got sober and looked back, I could see that when I started drinking at 13, I kind of lost the eye of the tiger type thing as far as sports. I was stronger just about everybody, so I didn't really feel like I had to practice. So anyway, it started causing me problems way back then, and to the point where I ended up getting kicked out of high school. But first time I ever felt a failure was I was at a prom night party when all my classmates were going to be graduating, and we were all drinking quite a bit out in the country, and then I realized that everybody out there was going to graduate except for me and this other dumb kid that got kicked out of school too. And it's the first time I ever felt like a real failure. It's so strong, I had to get out of there. Then I got married, but I wanted to change, so I seen the signs, you know, joint service to become a man. And when it actually went down, the joint Marines, the Marine recruiter was gone at the time to lunch, and the Navy recruiter said, well, how come you want to join the Marines? I said, well, I want to be in the toughest, baddest outfit there is. And he goes, well, if that's the case, he said, you need to, because he was a Navy SEAL. He said, you need to be a Navy SEAL. So he told me all about it. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's it. That's what I want. So I joined the Navy with guaranteed to be a Navy SEAL. But then when I got boot camp, nobody knew anything about a guarantee. So I ended up going into aviation, and I was, fortunate. I got made a Mediterranean cruise, around the world cruise, and two Vietnam cruises, and I was aboard an Enterprise aircraft carrier, which was
wow.
The first nuclear aircraft carrier that they had, and it was exciting getting to all them countries. I had no idea until I got in the service how lucky we are to be Americans and how far advanced we are compared to other countries. I mean, I was just shocked, actually. But when we were off the coast of Greece when they had some problems way back then, and then we made a couple Vietnam cruises where I worked up on the flight deck most of the time on Vigilante aircraft and worked on injection seats and air conditioning systems, but we were all loading bombs about as fast as you could load them because it was constantly, we had about 170 aircraft aboard ship and they're going and coming all the time. So it was kind of I guess it's kind of exciting, but it's also kind of made you kind of think to people getting killed or whatever. But I had a good time. I had a good career in the Navy and could have re-enlisted, but I thought I had better things to do, and so I didn't. But it's still one of the things I'm most proudest of is to be a veteran. And I love vets. And anyway, I ended up getting pretty bad in drugs, and real bad, and got in some trouble.
Was as a result of any PTSD? Were you ever diagnosed? Did you ever have an issue with that?
Well, I think just about everybody to some degree has some PTSD.
I would think.
People in the service, but also just I lived a really insane lifestyle. I've been in at least 350 fights and sent a lot of people to the hospitals, and thank God I never killed anybody, but it was just because of God. But it was just pretty crazy, and what finally broke through to me was realizing how badly I'd hurt my family, my wife at the time, and my kids, and my folks, and so that's what, and they did an intervention on me, go to treatment, so I did go to treatment. I didn't really know anything about treatment. That was back in 1978, and not too many people knew anything about alcoholism or drug addiction, but I went to the Vets Treatment Center, and I was just consumed with hate. I just couldn't, about myself. I just couldn't stand myself. Couldn't think of any good reason for my existence. But at the Vets Treatment Center in Omaha here, there was a big picture on the wall, and it's called the Unknown Confederate Soldier Prayer. And I seen that when I first went on the unit there, and I got it. I got a copy of it in my book, and I'm going to read it here because it was the first thing that gave me some hope. It says, I ask God, go ahead.
I said, good. Read, please.
Yeah. I ask God for strength that I might achieve. I was made weak that I might learn to obey. I asked for health that I might do greater things. I was given infirmity that I might do better things. I asked for riches that I might be happy. I was given poverty that I might be wise. I asked for power that I might have the praise of men. I was given weakness that I might feel the need for God. I asked for all things that I might enjoy life. I was given life that I might enjoy all things. I got nothing I asked for, but everything I'd hoped for. Almost despite myself, my unspoken prayers were answered. I am among all men most richly blessed. And I read that, and it was like, well, maybe there is some reason for all this insanity and pain and hurt that I've caused people. And then about a week later, this guy came up on the unit, and he just had his one-year birthday, and he told his story. I was looking for somebody that's a hardcore drug addict besides being an alcoholic. And there wasn't any back then, but he was a hardcore alcoholic. And I remember thinking, well, if that guy can do this, I should be able to do it. So I made a commitment, and I remember that commitment to this day. Because what I told myself is, if this thing don't work for once in my life, it's not going to be because of me. Because I always thought I was smart and knew whatever, and it never turned out. So this time I just made a decision. I'm gonna do everything they say, everything, not question it, even if it doesn't make sense. And then if it don't work, I'll just tell everybody to go to hell and take to the bitter end. But you know, that was almost 35 years ago, and it does work. And that poem I read, you know, it works because in AA or 12-step programs, the first step is to admit your powerlessness, your unmanageability, your incapability to change. And that's what I finally got to, as I realized that as smart as I was, as strong as I thought I was, I could not stop. And towards the last year, I was shooting up drugs all the time. And there's sometimes I might shoot up 40 or 50 times in an evening when I was doing cocaine. It just was insane. One time I shot up and fell over dead and from a cardiac arrest. My brother jumped on my chest and started my heart beating and my lungs working and saved my life. And so, and there was another time that I was, when I took off and went to California for a while, which I come to find out is called a geographical cure. When you go some other place, to change. But the problem is, no matter where you go, there you are. And there I was.
Got to take yourself with you.
Yeah. And so I ended up being around a lot of bikers and start doing drugs more at that time. And when I came back to Nebraska, I had a friend that had a real nice nightclub but he had a lot of trouble there, so I thought I'd be a bouncer for him. And I was, and things, about 3 months later, I ended up getting shot after one night that we had a party after the nightclub closed. And my same brother was with me, just 15 or 16 years old at the time. But when I got shot and everybody took off because somebody got shot, of course. And my brother was kind of going crazy over it. I thought I was dying, but I didn't want him to get shot too, so I asked him to say some prayers with me. And so he did. We prayed till the ambulance come. And on the way to the hospital, I heard the ambulance driver or the attendant tell the driver that there's no use. I was dead. I didn't have any heartbeat or respiration, and it sounded like they were talking from a deep tunnel or something. And I thought, well, I guess you must be able to hear after you die. And I was 25 years old at the time, and And that was the last thought I had. I was in the hospital, and I heard this noise. I couldn't understand what it was, but it seemed like it was extremely important for me to hear it. So I really worked hard at hearing the noise, and finally, after it seemed like ever, I finally realized it was me gagging because they were putting tubes down my throat and stuff. But
then
my mom and wife and two of my sisters were there, and my dad in the hospital room after the operation, and had all these tubes come out of me. And every time the mom or the, women would look at me, they just kind of start crying. And so I asked Dad, I said, I brought him close because he couldn't hardly talk. I said, "What's the deal, Dad? Am I dying?" And man, I got the best dad in the world. But he just looked at me and he goes, "Well, son," he said, "you got about a 20% chance." So I figured we got whipped, and he had this big smile on his face. I just, okay, Dad. But of course, it didn't stop me. It slowed me down for a while, and I got to be a pretty dangerous person, and got into sound drugs a lot, and just wasn't there for my kids, and it was just bad. But when I went to the best treatment center, I got in touch with this recovery program, and I always had belief in God. I just didn't believe in a personal God or whatever. But that's where I learned, that I do have a personal God. We all do, and he's part of us. And he's there willing to help us if we're willing to be open enough to let him help us. And I had gotten beat down enough, I was. So anyway, I went through treatment, and I went to halfway house. Most people, you have to be there 3 months, could be longer than five, but I was there for a year and a half. And I never did have a relapse, but that composite used didn't leave for about a year and a half. Constantly trying to keep my mind occupied so I wouldn't think. But at the same time, I got some people talked. Well, before I got in the recovery, I'd gotten in trouble with the law. And one time I had to see a probation officer and a psychiatrist, and I wouldn't talk to either one of them when I'd go in, but just be all bummed out. Finally, the psychiatrist was always trying to talk me into figuring out some way to get me to talk. And this one day I went in there, and I'd just gotten off work, and I was angry about something at work. And he goes, "Well, tell me, Bill, if you had to do all over again, what would you do different?" I said, "Well, I'd probably go to college. Seems like everybody I work for is a hell of a lot dumber than me." He goes, "Well, why don't you?" I said, "Well, how? There's no way. I'm 25 years old. I got kicked out of high school. I got a wife and four kids. No way." He goes, "Well, I don't know. I think there is a way if you want to." He says, "I think we can figure it out." And I couldn't get that out of my head after I left that he thought there was a way. And so it was a big joke at the time, but I went to college. I took psychology and sociology because I was really trying to change. And I took criminal justice, I think, probably in case it didn't work. But and I ended up graduating with degrees in those three areas. But I remember telling some people after I graduated, it's like some of my drug buddies said, "There ain't no way you can't afford to go to work with, any of these degrees, because you don't get any, make any money, and you'd have to be dedicated or something." I didn't realize I had to go through a dedication process. So mm-hmm. I spent a couple more years back out, crazier than I'd ever been, and to the point where I finally got beat down enough to where I was dedicated to get better, and people recognized that in me and told me how to go, become a counselor and go to this training, and I didn't think I could because I could afford, I could just barely afford my child support payments. And they said, well, I mean, just go ahead and do it. If you're supposed to work out, God will show you the way. And so I did go to training and I had to go back to treatment for a month back then as part of training. And I said, I'll write the county attorney and tell him what I'm doing, because everybody's happy now. I was getting better, and see if they could pay my child support for me for a month. And so I checked in treatment. Towards the end of treatment, I got a letter back from the county attorney telling me how proud he was. But he said, there's no way we can pay your child support for you. He said, but I was looking at the record here, and it looked like you're a month ahead of your child support payments. And there's no way I could have been a month ahead, so I've always thought that God paid that month of child support.
God paid the bill for you? Well, in one way or another, you're probably right.
Yeah, I know I am. So I was in treatment there too. I got a couple of stories of angels that I'm positive were angels that showed up for me. But one of them, I was in treatment there, and this one guy, he's a real scruffy, dirty-looking black guy, and he was angry at everybody and just kind of growled at everybody, and so nobody wanted anything to do with him, but I was trying to reach out, so I tried to reach out to him, and he didn't look like he was too happy about me doing that either, and he refused to come out of his room. So anyway, that evening I was in my room, sniveling, I think, about my, divorce and all that stuff. But anyway, he come in my room and he goes, "Hey, Bill." I was just amazed that he even knew my name, or that he even walked in my room. He goes, people are always praying to God Almighty, and God Almighty answers their prayers, but they're too busy praying to God Almighty. And God Almighty answers their prayers, but they're too busy. And I thought, what's this old guy? Just seemed like he's being crazy. So he went back to his room, and I went to bed, and before I fell asleep, it dawned on me, I get it. We're too busy asking God for what we need, and then God gives us those things, but we're too busy asking for what else we need to stop and be grateful for, the gift that's already been given us. And once I figured that out, I thought, man, I can't wait till the morning so I can go thank this guy. So first thing in the morning, I jumped out of bed. I went over to his room. He wasn't in there, and I went to the nurse's station. They said, well, he left last night about 2 or 3 in the morning. And, that guy, that was almost 35 years ago, and he came into that treatment center, was there less than 20 hours, and it seemed like the only reason he was there was to give me that bit of advice. And he always said, God Almighty. And I always use that term too. And so I think he is an angel. Came in there to guide me a little bit. But I've had a lot of angels. And,
me too.
Yep. And hopefully maybe over the years I've been able to be an angel for somebody else. But anyway, I got into counseling, and I've been a therapist. I retired about 2.5-3 years ago just because I got really burned out badly. And especially the last 19 years working in a treatment center at a homeless shelter, which was pretty bad. I mean, people that came there were in bad shape. But our successor, I'd started the treatment center. I started up a couple other ones before that. They're always very successful, but I always
wanted to ask you. something real quick. I'm sorry about that. It's only because we've had a lot of shows in the past that have talked about the rate of homelessness. In fact, I did a show, I won't go into it, but it was on the, on any given day, there's 55,000 female veterans homeless around the country. She had been one of them and started an organization called FinalSaluteInc.org. And then, of course, you know, the Wounded Warriors, I've heard calls over the last year observing as a host from them. I don't expect you to be, you're retired, you were a drug and alcohol counselor in the worst of circumstances, and you didn't know, you hadn't had a TBI back then when you were working there, but you were a veteran, and in your experience in the homeless shelter environment, did you have a marked recognition of a significant number of veterans and or what you might now have recognized as TBIs diagnosed or undiagnosed?
Oh, yeah. And, in fact, the treatment center, St. Francis, St. Francis homeless shelter here in Omaha, we really reach out to the vets. I mean, we reach out real strongly to try to reach the vets and try to give them some hope and try to get them, if they need treatment or whatever they need, try to help them get that. And so it's always been a real big part and a real great part. And you know, probably about 60% of the people in a homeless shelter have some sort of a mental diagnosis, some sort of disorder, and about probably 80% of them have a chemical dependency issue, and,
mm-hmm.
and quite often they have, you know, they're all together. People got chemical dependency and mental health disorders and whatever. But and as far as I've worked with a lot of people that had a lot of vets that had traumatic stress trauma disorders and tremendously. And the good thing about Sienna Francis, the Miracles program I was able to start 19 years ago. It's a long-term program. It's a minimum 4 months, and because it takes people a long time to finally get, you know, they got knocked out of balance or they never were balanced to start with, but they just, you know, got whatever brought them down. They just weren't able to change it. So it takes a long time and good support to change that. And that's our treatment center is incredibly successful. Most people don't even believe the success rate because it's probably around 80% for people that complete the program. But by the time they complete it, we've been able to work on all the areas.
Right.
That
But, you know, I'm thinking that now, and even with you, because we'll come eventually here to your TBI, you know, when I think of the fact that you were in the military and did 2 stints in Nam, and that you were the small-town bad boys who were in fights all the time, the chances are you could have had some concussions or post-concussive syndrome from the kind of lifestyle that you were leading, both during substance abuse, but just even coming up, you know, a scrapper in the neighborhood. And what they're finding, you start the chemical dependency part of it, and that is a large percentage of people in the homeless shelter. But I'm hearing over here in this venue that a lot of those are brain injuries that haven't been diagnosed properly, and that a lot of people have had some compromise to their gray matter from blows to the head before, which isn't an excuse, you know, for the alcoholism or drug addiction any more than a genetic predisposition. You know, it is something we ultimately have to take responsibility for ourselves. But it's an interesting thing I've been learning, kind of dawning on me as I've been over here. But okay, now going back to you then, yes, a large percentage of the people homeless are veterans that have PTSD, and many of them have self-medicated because they can't accept or adjust to coming back to a civilian situation or a different situation where their psyche is different than it was before, and they feel like they got dropped like an alien into a strange place and had bad or compromised coping skills.
Yeah, and I was going to talk about that too, because a lot of the people that we dealt with, a lot more than I realized before this brain injury, were people that had brain injuries, and I knew that they'd had some sort of brain injuries. I didn't really realize, what that means, you know, until
right.
I've had myself, and a lot of the, especially the Vietnam veterans. I mean, when I got out of service, I was thinking, because we went to Sydney, Australia one time, and there were so many people there. Like paper said, there was 350,000 people that came to the city just to welcome the American sailors. And so that was right before we were getting ready to go back home. And I'm thinking, oh, man, it'd be really neat when we get to the United States. And I think there's about 40 people standing above the Golden Gate Bridge. And that was
oh,
it.
No.
Everybody was upset about the Vietnam War. And so
right. Not a good time for the veterans.
Yeah. But,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, so, and it's been really great the last, I'd say, 20 years of Veterans Administration and hospitals. I mean, they've gotten so much better with working with vets. Before, they didn't seem like they appreciated us. But now you go to the hospital and everybody treats you like, like they respect you and stuff. It's pretty neat.
Well, that's when the government is open, though, right?
Yep. Yeah. When the government's open, right.
Yeah, let's get that government opened. Okay,
yes,
go
yes.
on. I'm going to get that off my chest right now, but go on.
Okay. So anyway, what you're talking about is going to bring up this, with all the fights I've been in, I've been in a couple serious, real serious accidents, very serious, where I spent a long time in the hospital and stuff. And so I did have some brain injuries, but I never thought anything about it. Neither did really the doctors or anything other than just that
right.
I had concussions or something. But I know about, probably about 8 or 9 years ago, I had to get a, what is that, when they scan your brain, an MRI.
Yeah.
And I remember my doctor, because he knew me, he knew my history and stuff, and he said, you know, if I didn't know your history, I'd be really, really worried about you, because you got so many lesions and scar tissue there in your brain. But he said, but I know how come it's there. So, but, and, you know, I didn't think much about it either until this time. It was like, well, how the heck of all that stuff, how can I end up having a brain injury? But I believe I'd had some brain injuries before, just not to the extent that this one was. And, And so, I talked about that brain injury is about 16 months ago. It's like 1:30 in the afternoon. I'd given the guy a sponsor a ride over to the old market here in Omaha to meet with his mentor, and then, you know, an hour later, I was going to pick him up. When he called, he was ready to go. I said, I'll go get my car and pick you up, and then I don't remember anything. And I might have had a reaction to some of the medication I was taking, but whatever, I ended up falling down there at 1:30 in the afternoon, hit my head on the cement, and going into severe seizures. And
How long ago? I'm sorry, how long ago was this?
16 months, probably.
16 months ago. Okay, so you're just in the old market, and you
just
blacked out.
Don't remember, but I hit my head and went into seizures and came and took me to the hospital. And I spent about 6 weeks in intensive care. I don't remember any of it, but I was in ungodly pain. Everybody's telling me, but I'm glad I don't remember. But my family's all there. My kids took turns feeding me because I was too messed up to even feed myself. And then after I got out of intensive care, I got sent to a rehabilitation unit. And I was walking down the hallway with my walker one day, and I thought, and I woke up. I said, what in the world? What am I doing here? And I was trying to figure out where I was and looked out the window, and I realized the hospital was in, and I was like, well, I only live about a mile and a half from here, so I decided to leave. So I just left. And I had walked through this about a mile of forest and up and down stuff. And it was like 8 o'clock at night, and I rode my horse in that area all the time. But I got to the edge of that, and I was looking at it going, geez, I don't know if I know how to even walk through this because I got a walker and pajamas on. And so I decided I'd take a right and go through just this little part and get up to the highway. So I did that, and by the time I got up to the street there, a cop car come flying in and stopped and said, are you Bill? And of course, I got pajamas on and walking them with a walker. And I was, yeah. So, well, we're taking you back. And it's like, I was kind of happy to they're taking me back. I didn't even know what I was in there for, but certainly it was looking kind of bleak. So, I'm fortunate because, well, to begin with, I got the best family in the world. We're close. And then with working with thousands of clients over the years, I've got so many really good friends and stuff. And they all come up to see me. And when I got out of the hospital, they'd help me get to meetings and stuff. And then this last time when I had this severe accident in May where I totaled out my car on the interstate, and I'm just, again, blessed because I, at the very least, I should end up being a paraplegic, but I had some shattered ribs and my breastplate broke, fractured, and part of my tailbone chipped off, and I get an operation and stuff. And I spent another 5-6 weeks in intensive care over that. But I didn't, when I got out of the hospital and came back home, it looked like I was going to lose everything because I hadn't been at work for, a year. And financially, I was in just poor shape. And I was just feeling totally depressed, suicidal, really, and just didn't have any hope. And faith has always been big for me, but I didn't have any, nothing.
And, trust.
But I had a lot of friends that came and picked me up and took me to meetings. And I tried to talk and just start sobbing. I couldn't even talk. And they just grab hold of me and hold me until I quit crying. And, And finally, after about 4 weeks of that, and I do my morning meditation and prayer, even though it didn't mean anything, I'd do it anyway because I was supposed to. And then one morning, I got five things I usually read. I read the first two and nothing like always. And then the third one, all of a sudden, I felt that peace that passes all understanding. I felt God, you know. And it was like, oh, man, I forgot how this even felt. And so it wasn't, you know, I got that back just by seeing the love in people's eyes and hearing their faith. And then pretty soon, you know, mine came back. And today, I got a lot of faith. Like I have most of the time, but it's been great. But it's no good if you don't totally be able to turn your life over. This brain injury and this accident I had physically, and you know, a couple things I wanted to tell people that have brain injuries. And I think one of the biggest things for me was impatience. Or especially with a brain injury, because you can't see it on the outside. And it seems like, well, I should be able to be better than this.
So what I'm finding out, it's the silent epidemic, that dynamic you talked about. I thought I was crazy for it, but it's real common over here. Believe it?
Oh, yeah, very common. And the lack of energy, which I still have a problem with, because I think...
Yeah,
what's the matter?
Me too.
You know, I'm a big, you know, heavy duty weightlifter. And
I know.
Don't have energy for that. And I did just realize in the last few weeks how much my vocabulary had. I lost a lot of my vocabulary, and I guess I hadn't got healthy enough until recently to be able to realize that, because I'm, you know, have a loss for a word I'm trying to think of, something pretty simple.
That's a certain kind of amnesia. There's like several categories of amnesia, and I can't remember the name because memory is one of the problems too. But I learned this on the radio channel. Maybe someone will know it in a minute, but whatever that is, it retrograde? It's one of the amnesias where you can't find your word. I just learned that on here not long ago.
Yeah, and the memory, just a lot of loss of memory at times. And then sometimes it comes, but some of it's just, and then the depression and anxiety are critical, especially I've had a problem with depression probably all my life anyway, and that's why I use drugs and alcohol so much. And it's just kind of frustrating. I mean, I have a master's degree in counseling guidance. I got a bachelor's degree in psychology and sociology and criminal justice. And I did training to be a life coach, and I did schooling to become a hypnotist, and with all this stuff, you know, it's like, wow, and dealing with people's problems, but I got burned out from that. I don't want to do that anymore, but I'd still like to be, I love being a life coach and doing meditation and relaxation and hypnosis is great, but I don't have the energy I'd like to have to really push myself to do it, but I am, but it's
harder.
It's
a lot harder. I know. You shouldn't should on yourself. You know that from basic psychology.
Yeah.
You know, you can only do what you can do a day at a time, and you might want to listen to my next week guest. His name is William Roper. He's out there somewhere in the world, and he's got a handle, TBI vet, but he has turned to things like yoga and meditation to find his peace. And so there's a lot of roads You know, there's a lot of roads to the destination recovery. Sometimes we blaze our own, and sometimes we take a little, we observe, you know, and take a little from each of the roads we see and develop our own plan of recovery. But, you know, there's so many things, I mean, new realizations for you now. You got to observe, observe a lot, and now you're part of, and there's so many things that I've learned that, well, some you probably know already from counseling and your job experience, but it's like you said, it's totally different when you've had the experience yourself, because you notice, you knew the before, you know, and the after might look the same to everybody, but it's not. Again, though, the recency of your injury, you know, it's not even been 2 years, and then you got in a car wreck. Now, one of the things for the audience out there listening is that, you know, we've heard more and more on the shows about repeated blows to the brain having an escalating, you know, I won't say damage, but compromise to the brain. More and more statistics are coming out about that. And, you know, that car accident that you had, it, you know, could vary well with the type of injuries you had. A couple things is, first of all, I've heard from some of the professionals on here that when you have something real obvious that's hurt, like, you know, say your broken ribs or your broken leg or whatever it is, they're focusing on that and not so much the head, you know, or the skull. And sometimes it's overlooked, you know, injuries are overlooked. But when you fell, did you not say you had like 5 bleeds?
Yeah, my brain was bleeding 5 different places. I had 2 severe brain injuries. And I was, you know, again, blessed because a lot of people don't survive either one of those brain injuries. Or if they do, they have some serious, you know, disability problem. But I was blessed to be able to make it through that. But you know, like the car accident, I mean, I don't remember what happened, but you know, I know I have to be a lot more careful driving and plus if you have to take medication, you know, medications can have an effect also, even if they're not mood altering meds, they still can have an effect. So it's, and the big thing I want to tell people, though, is that have experienced a brain injury is just have faith, you know, truly. If I didn't have the faith I have, and if I wasn't in recovery from chemical dependency and part 12-step programs, I don't know exactly how I could have got better. But I wanted to read another reading that I like that I have in my book too, but it's titled Living Ourselves into a New Life. So let me read this. If we will thank our higher power each day for the problems in our life, we will find that we can live and cope with them. And if it be God's will, He will transform them in ways we cannot comprehend. We do not understand our lives. If we will become willing to let God handle each of our situations in His way, we will find ourselves living ourselves into new ways of being. We will experience the freedom and joy which we cannot have comprehended in our old ways of thinking and being. We cannot think ourselves into a better life. We must live ourselves each day into better thinking. Have I lived myself into a new life? And I love that because, and I am blessed that I'm in 12-step program and have all these years of working it, but you know, when I first got, or before I got sober, you know, I went to college, got those degrees in psychology, sociology, criminal justice, trying to fix myself. But the problem was, you know, is my thinking. That was the problem to start with. And you can't straighten up your thinking when you're not thinking straight. And what I found in AA is, or 12-step programs, is what does work is if we just do the things that, you know, we're guided to do and not try to figure anything out. That if we do them long enough, pretty soon our thinking changes. And then we do start having a better life. And that's one of the things I wanted to stress for people, too, is just do the basic things that you're supposed to do. Don't try to figure out nothing because at you know, any particular time, we're not capable of figuring things out. But if we'll just do what we're supposed to do, eventually we'll understand what we didn't understand, and we will find ourselves being able to live a better life. And today, you know, I still got worries, financial, worrying about whatever. I have some really wonderful friends that actually bought me a car. Couldn't believe it. And I got some other friends that are putting on a benefit for me this coming month. And it's kind of embarrassing in a way, but humbling, I guess. But also it's pretty wonderful to have people that care about you and recognize that, you know, you're having a difficult time or whatever. And so the main thing is just to, and again, I mentioned this briefly, but there's nothing. I've been so aware just recently from this last accident that there's just no way in the world I could ever get better or hang in here long enough to get better if it wasn't for God, because He's the one that. And I'm not a Bible thumper or whatever, but I absolutely totally believe in God, Jesus, the Holy Spirit, and I know for a fact that, especially as depressed and lost as I was this last several months, there's no way I could have made it without God. And for me, God works through people. And, you know, fortunately, I have a big support system. But if you don't have a support system, that's something you need to get. You need to get part of a group that's positive, that can be there for you. And the other side of it is, you know, I sponsor a lot of people, and I'm there for them, but they're there for me. You know, that's how we get better, is just being there for each other. And so, you know, that's my biggest message, is to, you know, let yourself experience, God in your life. And so recently it's just like, well, when people got together and got me a car, it's like, geez, you know, I couldn't believe it. And things just seemed to work out. Blessed, I got a wonderful home here, 2.5 acres, got a horse. And right before I got on the show, I was sitting outside on my patio on the swing just thinking about, you know, while asking God to try to help me help somebody when I was talking today, but also just thanking Him for helping me. The other thing I want to say before we do stop is I did write a book. It's titled From Addiction to Miracles, and it's pretty incredible. I never had time to market it before. I'm in the process of writing a revised edition, which I will put more effort into marketing. But I got about probably 4,700 copies out, and I've had at least well over 2,000 people get hold of me and thank me for how much it's helped them or their family. And in fact, I had a priest, when I was giving a talk at Creighton, he came up to me afterwards and he goes, wow, he said, you're Bill Keck. He said, I've been wanting to get hold of you for 2 years. Said somebody sent me your book, and I read it, and it was so good. I give it to my best friend, a priest friend of his that had been in treatment several times and gets over. I give it to him, and he read it, and he hasn't drank for 2 years now. And it's like, oh, all right. He goes, well, besides that, we decided about a year and a half ago to start a treatment center. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And he goes, well, that isn't even half of it. He said, we live in Uganda.
No, my goodness.
So somebody sent him a copy off to Africa. And then I end up working with a guy that was going to Creighton he's a brother, Catholic brother, and he is from Uganda. And I said, oh, have you ever heard of, and he goes, oh, yeah, I've volunteered over at that treatment center. He said, that's really a good center. And it's like, so it's pretty amazing how much that book has helped. But, and I wrote it for 3 or 4 reasons. Of course, one is to help the alcoholic addict. But just as important as I wanted to help family members because they people just don't understand. And same way with, family members of people that have mental disorders and brain damage. You know, they just don't quite understand. So it helps that. And I also wanted to just let the public know that recovery is happening. And it's happening big. But then the last thing is just regardless of what problem you have, it's really a spiritual journey, and you can take that spiritual journey, regardless of what problems you're developing or having. So anyway, I hope people will give it a shot because I've been impressed. In fact, after I finally got out of the hospital and got my faith back, I went ahead and decided to read it again, and it's like, wow, I'd forgotten how good this was. So,
yeah, I have to read mine one of these days.
Yeah.
Where do people get your book? Now, I think I posted an Amazon link, but it didn't really look like it was for sale there anymore. Is it?
No, I've just been doing it basically out of my home, so.
If anyone wants a copy of the book, then how much is it?
It's just $20 is what it is with tax. So, but if you can't afford $20, send me what you can. And I'll send you a copy back.
Okay, and since he's not online right now, you can always send it through my website at inaflash.org. There's a contact the author and say you're interested in getting hooked up with Bill Keck. And I'll see that happens since he's marketing. So don't pay attention to Amazon. It is listed there. That's Bill, K-E-C-K. And again, that book was written 8 or so years ago, before, when you were talking about addictive disorders and, everything that you just said. But now in your addendum book coming up with the added experience of actually being a brain injury survivor and looking back in your life in retrospect of the blows to the head, the concussions that you had in your younger days, and the cumulative effects of lifestyle, whether it's alcohol and drugs, living a rough lifestyle, being in a position where you have maybe athletics, repeated blows to the head, or military service. Particularly combat, military combat, I think you're right in that there's a well underdiagnosed percentage of people out there running around with brain injury or post-concussive syndrome that are winding up in homeless shelters or sometimes in jails, prisons for, the the impulse control issues that can come up. But I imagine that it's interesting you wrote the book from your professional and personal experience up to that time 8 years ago. But I'm wondering if you're feeling like I am, that I've learned so much in the last almost 2 years since mine's been out that I could write another book right now. Now, you're relatively new. It's a couple years into it, but relatively new to the brain injury community as a survivor yourself in a peer-to-peer situation, which is what we do here. And I know that you're big on peer-to-peer support and know that it's an essential ingredient in any kind of recovery that any of the 12-step ones fall under. And like you said, for me, it's been the same, a relationship with God. There were times that I didn't think I had it in me personally to see through some situations and some feelings and thought processes. And I think both of us, when we talked earlier, were talking about different things that had happened in our lives and just have to kind of shake our head and say, grace is the only explanation for it, because we made some efforts after demanding to skin our knees pretty hard, but somehow we've been shown that we need to come in a certain direction. And I think both of us have been service oriented in our own ways for a long time, and this is just the way that we're directed to being now. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry about your fall, the 5 bleeds. Now, did you have a surgery, brain surgery for that?
No, I was fortunate that the swelling went down and eventually the bleeding stopped after about 6-7 weeks.
And that is really great. Geez, 6 or 7 weeks of bleeding, and you wonder just more and more evidence, like I said, coming out about these repeated traumas to the brain, if you will. There's a couple things I want to do now, and then I know that I'm going to have to let you go. But if anyone would like to call in and has a question or would like to make a comment, the show number here is 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. And if you're already on the switchboard, if you press 1, I'll know that you have a question or a comment. And then I'm going to drop back for just a minute while Bill's still on the phone. We've talked about his past experience as a counselor in addictions and addictions and recovery, and now his own experience the last 2 years with having repeated and severe brain injuries of his own. But again, now I want to refer back for just a second and give people time to call in if they want, 424-243-9540. And go back to what he did for a living and the comment I mentioned early in the show that I had read on one of the social networking boards that alcohol really doesn't cause brain damage, which was not the case with you. It was maybe a lot of people you were working with. But this I found from the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. And it says the Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome. Up to 80% of alcoholics, however, have a deficiency in thiamine, and some of these people will go on to develop serious brain disorders such as Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome. WKS is a disease that consists of 2 separate syndromes, a short-lived and severe condition called Wernicke's in this is one of DJ's words, encephalopathy, encephalopathy. Spit it out. You said you had a problem finding words earlier. I'm going to join you on that one. Shoot, I'm going to have to read that again, too. I know that's back in here. And a long-lasting and debilitating condition known as Korsakoff's psychosis. The symptoms of Wernicke's include mental confusion, paralysis of the nerves that move the eyes, i.e., ocular motor disturbances, and difficulty with muscle coordination. For example, patients with Wernicke's encephalopathy may be too confused to find their way out of a room or may not even be able to walk. Many Wernicke's patients, however, do not exhibit all three of these signs and symptoms, and clinicians working with alcoholics must be aware that this disorder may be present even if the patient shows only one or two of them. In fact, studies performed after death indicate that many cases of thiamine deficiency-related encephalopathy may not be diagnosed in life. Thiamine deficiency related to this may not be diagnosed in life because all of the classic quote-unquote symptoms and signs were not present or recognized. Approximately 80 to 90% of alcoholics with Wernicke's encephalopathy also develop Korsakoff's psychosis, a chronic and debilitating syndrome characterized by persistent learning and memory problems. Patients with Korsakoff's psychosis are forgetful and quickly frustrated and have difficulty with walking and coordination. Although these patients have problems remembering old information, which is retrograde amnesia, it is their difficulty in laying down new information, i.e., antegrade amnesia, that is the most striking. For example, these patients can discuss in detail an event in their lives, but an hour later might not remember even having that conversation. The treatment. The cerebellum, an area of the brain responsible for coordinating movement and perhaps even some forms of learning, appears to be particularly sensitive to the effects of thiamine deficiency and is the region most frequently damaged in association with chronic alcohol consumption. Administering thiamine helps to improve brain function, especially in patients in the early stages of WKS, when damage to the brain is more severe. The course of care shifts from treatment to providing support to the patient and his or her family. Custodial care may be necessary for 25% of patients who have permanent brain damage and significant loss of cognitive skills. Scientists believe that a genetic variation could be one explanation for why only some alcoholics with thiamine deficiency go on to develop severe conditions like WKS, but additional studies are necessary to clarify how generic variants might cause some people to be more vulnerable to WKS than others. So, in any case, there's just reams of information here that show that, as we were talking in the chat room, one of the social networking pages earlier, that and you witnessed in the homeless shelter, that there's some things playing into that alcohol use and addiction, and sometimes, a lot of times, that's a traumatic brain injury, and people can get into addictive or alcohol problems either prior that help cause the TBI or after in an effort to self-medicate and not be able to get through that depression and get stuck that comes with having to let go of an old me and embrace a new me and go on to create a life worth living. Would you agree?
What'd you say?
Were you blanked out? It sounded like some feedback on the phone.
Okay.
Bill, are you able to hear now?
I can hear you right now, yeah.
Okay, good. I think the others probably did too. I have one question on the board, and I'm going to come right up to it. But to top this off, I'm going to some of you may have heard the 12 steps in a 12-step program before, but this is 12 steps of recovery. And my show is called Recovery Now, which may have to do with recovery from anything, brain injury, bad childhood, drugs and alcohol, but these are the steps of recovery. Number one, I can't. Number two, he can. Number three, I'll let him. Number four, clean house. Number five, trust God. Number six, surrender. Number seven, attitude change. Number eight, preparation to end isolation. 9, amending actions. 10, basis for daily living. 11, peace of mind. And 12, joy of living through action. So those are just some of the steps a few of us take. And Bill, I know you've got to get going. You're so early on in your recovery, and I know that you get tired easily, but I do have one person, and this is who I call, I think I recognize the phone number, our Tuesday night Brain Injury Radio host, our Southern gentleman, Les Paul Morgan. Les Paul, this is Bill. Meet my friend Bill.
Hi, Bill, and I want to thank you for being here tonight. I work in a peer support and advocacy office for helping people with brain injuries, and I've met a lot of people who have been homeless. I've met a lot of people who were Vietnam and different battlefield, even current ones, that have come home and just fallen through the cracks. And it breaks my heart to know that that's happening on a regular basis, and a lot of the things that she's talking about. I mean, you were a helicopter pilot. You've been injured several times. I mean, thank you for serving, first of all, I want to say, and all that you've done. And, Kim, you've got a wonderful guest, and you are a wonderful host tonight.
Thank you.
I want to thank you both very much for being here. But I think we as American citizens need to we send a lot of money around the world, and some of it is very needed to help other countries, but we need to help people in our country that are in these kind of conditions. And in places like the St. Francis House, I'm sorry, I said St. Francis. What is it?
Close
the
enough.
Sienna.
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 Francis,
I'm sorry.
Sienna House. Yep, Francis
I lost
Sienna.
The name. But it wouldn't be nice to see these people feel welcomed home. I'm sometimes saying, and I'm a host on Tuesday night, like she was saying, but I've met so many wounded warriors that come home and don't feel like they're home. They've lived here, some have lived here for 30 and 40 years and never felt like they came home. What can we do to help people like that? I want to help people. I think we should do an extra big effort. I think the United States should just make this a new mission here in America.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly. In fact, it's, the reason I stayed with or went to Sienna, France to start with. And I was blessed to be able to start up a treatment center that didn't cost any money. And, it's a 103-bed program, and people are there a minimum 4 months, and a lot of people a lot longer, probably average about 8 or 9 months, just because it takes a long time to reorganize your thinking and get things up. And the last part of their treatment after that 4 months is getting a job outside of the program and continue to live there and go through all the difficulties you go through with new employment and stuff. And so when they're finally community. And then we help them to find suitable housing. But that's what's needed. And in fact, you know, the model program that I developed, we've always been willing to help other people develop that program, too. I got a good friend that lives in Florida that's him and his people that work for him came and spent a week with us to learn how we are doing things. And they've developed their own program, a long-term one in Florida. But that's what we need is more long-term programs. And yes, we do.
And we need... I always say weary warriors welcome home. I mean, a lot of them never felt welcomed home. And I'm just going to tell you, in Augusta, Georgia, and the surrounding Aiken County areas where I live, and there's large military population, and we have a lot of homeless veterans, and it breaks my heart to see that. And so thank you for being on here tonight and just sharing this. And I'm looking at the Sierra Francis House homeless shelter on the web right now.
Good.
And they're great people. I want to – oh, sorry, Bill.
We got people all over the United States that have came to the Sierra Francis House to get help. So if somebody's listening and they want help.
I know someone I'd like to refer to you if I can still get in touch with him. I was working with a man, and I don't want to take too much more of your time, but I was working with one man that he looked like he was going to make it. He fought in several battlefronts, and I mean, he's a real warrior, but when he came home, he felt rejected and lost and lonely and became homeless. And later on, someone helped get him housing. A military project actually started working to help develop some fronts for him to really come back, and got him an apartment, got him all this stuff. And he came into my office one day drunk, and he said, "I can't quit. I don't know what to do." And he's crying. And he said, "Les Paul, I don't know what to do. I can't stop. Everybody's trying to help me, and they're about to turn their back on me." And I believe he lost his apartment. And that is sad to see that.
Well, that's the first step, is admitting you can't stop, and then getting with people or someplace that can give you the route to be able to use the rest of the program that I've got. And I want to say one other thing real quick. And, you know, I quit counting, I don't even know how many years ago, probably 13 or 14 years ago. But at one point, from the time I got sober, I counted people I personally knew that committed suicide. And it got up to, like, I think 58 or 59. And I just...
Wow.
Quit going after that, but
that's bad.
It's a lot of people. I mean, that's just people I personally knew that once I heard about and stuff. But because chemical dependency, brain injuries, hopelessness, post acute with traumatic syndrome. I mean, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get the help you need, and it's not some kind of a long-term basis for you, then it gets pretty hopeless. And so I think I was just excited when Kim got hold of me and told me about this radio program, and that, you know, people are reaching out. So that we do got to have a support system.
That's right.
And see, Bill and I, we learned about that support system in a different context, but it carries over, because it's like I say in the beginning, it's in the we that we find the me, and that if we choose to isolate in it, it's we say our own mind is the most dangerous playground, you know, if we're in there alone.
Yeah.
You know, we should be taken. But I got a couple of interesting stories about where he works and how we met. I was a young insurance lady at the time, and we're going back almost 20 years. Actually, I go back Bill, to where it was Paul, and they were just in a house, like two houses over in Nicholas before they built the facility. And I remember going in, and I was a young gal, and of course the homeless shelter isn't in the best part of town, and I'm kind of walking over the drunks and you know, the hood standing on the corner, and I strutted in there and did my insurance presentation, and Sienna Francis have been clients for a couple of decades and with me through the first director through when I had my brain aneurysm and didn't kick me to the curb. And so, you know, some clients did, but interestingly, in this place where they're spiritually there for those who are suffering or downtrodden, whether it's an addiction or a brain injury, as they're finding more and more residents there have, and are veterans, you know, with diagnosed or undiagnosed PTSD. But it was funny, one of the years that, well, right when I first met him, at one of the first meetings I was presenting to their staff, there was two, you know, Bill is a very big, imposing guy, and there was another one, Corey, at the time, and I know you remember Corey, Bill, but we were sitting in a meeting, and all of a sudden this noise broke out, like a fight or some kind of something not very good outside the door, and I was scared, you know, because I was in a different surrounding for me, and this sounded like a bad thing. Corey and Bill stood up and looked at me and, with all sincerity, excused themselves. Would you excuse us for a moment? And sure, you know, and I'm kind of just sitting there with my mouth agape. They go out, a fight had broken out, you know, something had gone on, and a fight had broken out outside the doors. Took Bill and Corey about 3 minutes to end that, and they came walking in and sat back down like gentlemen, and we got through the presentation, and that was funny. And another funny time came many years later when I knew I brought a green, I'll tell you, Aflac agent with me. He was a new to the business young man, and I, of course, now had been doing this for 15 years, and so I knew protocol, and normally we meet after a staff meeting because all the employees are in one place at one time, and I brought the young Aflac guy in, and we did the presentation, and it's a tradition at the end that everybody, and I don't know, how many people do you think is in that room full, Bill? The cafeteria room.
Oh, well, today there's like 100 and some people. But.
Yeah, so there's 100 and some people in this room. I make the presentation. The director calls the end of the meeting, and the young Aflac guy's got his computer set up in back, and he notices that everybody in the room stands up, and everybody starts backing up from the chairs to form a circle and hold hands, and I put down my portfolio and pen and stepped up in the middle and held, not in the middle of the circle, but in the circle, and held hands, and we all closed the meeting with the serenity prayer, and I thought the poor little green Aflac guy was going to fall over and drop dead. He didn't know that that was included in the job description, you know, but I kind of did that on purpose because we can be rather a spunky lot. But anyway, it's like I said, I was horrified to hear that Bill had had these two, the traumatic brain injury and these five bleeds, and was scared to death after spending a year around here of what could have happened to him, and got a hold of him right away, and then had a little talk about what we're doing and what we've been doing for a couple of decades, and how much that's needed here, which is to really drive home the point of peer-to-peer support, and that the people really need to be careful about the alcohol and drugs, because then that those things in and of themselves cause brain damage, and around the trades they call it wet brain, probably this fancy disease that I was stammering out, the Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome, is probably what we call, you know, wet brain. And so a lot of brain damage can be done from drugs and alcohol. Luckily, Bill had been a long ways down and past that road before his brain injury came. But then, similar to me, he had introduction to the importance of peer-to-peer support and a support group being in place as an elemental role in recovery. So anyway, I'm just, I'm going to close something, another thing we have here in Omaha. It originated here, and I read this once before, but it's Boys Town. And this is a quote that I really like, Bill will be able to relate to. "The work will continue, you see, whether I am here or not, because it is God's work, not mine." And that's a quote of Father Edward J. Flanagan, founder of Boys Town. And I think that that we can agree that that's the case. And Bill, I don't want you to hang up yet, because I think someone that you know, I don't know, do you think that she would not want me to unmute her mic and just go on and do what I was planning to do to close out my portion of the show with you? Or how do you think Mom would feel? I think Mom might be here, according to the switchboard.
Cool. That'd be cool if Mom's on the switchboard.
Okay, well, Mom, I know you're listening out there, and I'm going to put you on the spot, so take a deep breath and slowly let it out. I got to tell you, you qualify for sainthood as far as I'm concerned, having 7 of those Keck boys and 10 kids all together, but I'm going to unmute your mic. And Mrs. Keck, are you with us?
I sure am.
Well, God bless you. Thanks for being here for the show tonight. It means a lot to me, and I know it means a lot to Bill.
It was wonderful. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. We've traveled down similar roads, and like I said, I was horrified to hear about the brain injury, but as he would tell you, and as you know by now, that until you've walked a mile in those shoes, you don't have a complete understanding, you know. And like I said, you've just got to be a saint to be putting up with all those boys. How did you do it?
Oh, I was no saint, I'll tell you. But we had a lot of fun and a lot of arguments, but they all came out fine.
I wanted to tell the story.
As that woman that, you know, he'll know which one I don't want to hear from. So if he'll say no to her call, I'll say extra prayers.
Okay, well, all right, you got that from Mom. What did you want to say now, Bill?
I want to share a cute story about Mom. I got out of the hospital a couple months ago, and my daughter, my youngest daughter, moved, her and her husband moved over here to my house to help me out, because I couldn't remember anything and couldn't walk or anything. And I've been home about a couple weeks, and I noticed that my daughter, Belly, was looking kind of upset. And I said, what's going on? Because I thought things were great. She says, well, Dad, I disrupt my family to move in here so we can help you, but I don't feel like letting me help you. And I didn't do too much. So I was kind of surprised, because I thought it was great. So anyway, we had a good talk, and we cried and told each other how much we loved each other. And so it was good. But then a few hours later, Mom called me up, and she goes, And yeah, I remember Mom's 85. I'm 69. She goes, Butch, that's my family nickname. She says, I hear you're not letting Billy take care of you. You're trying to do too much. So I don't feel too good, but if I have to, I'm going to come down there and make you do what you're supposed to do. And I just started
that's
laughing.
Right.
That's okay, Mom. We had a good talk. But it just was, everybody I told that story to just loves it, that my mom's going to come down and make me do right.
And straighten you up.
That's
yeah.
Right. Straighten him right out. That sounds like
right.
Paul's mom is transitioned, but it sounds like when she was around, she was the same kind of mom. So good for you every now and then. I've known Bill a long time. I love him to death, but I think every now and then he does need a kick in the butt. So I'm glad you're around.
That's
to keep
right.
him in check, Ma. Tough a guy he is, and big and as imposing as he looks, I have a feeling I know who would win if you came and had a talk with him.
Yep, she
would
win.
That's right, yeah. Well, you
run
had a wonderful
heels.
Program, and I really appreciated it. So I'll get off the phone and say prayers for all of you.
Yeah,
okay,
love you,
and
Mom.
Don't.
What, hon?
I said I love you, Mom.
Okay, I love you too, hon, all of you.
Thanks, and you hang on, Mrs. Keck. I am muting your mic, but if you can hold on for just a moment. Bill, I want you to hang on, especially because of the exchange that just went on. You don't know this, but I have a regular song, a regular outro to my show, that I'm going to play in a minute and dedicate to you, and because you spoke about angels, and to your mom because of the nature of the conversation we just had. But before I do that and then hang on when I mute your mic, I want to thank you so much for being here tonight. I'm so sorry that you had to have a brain injury to get here, but you've been very meaningful in my life and been there for me during a couple tough times in my life, and I think you're the greatest.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, then I'll tell you good night, and if you hold on for just one moment, I'm going to send out a dedication to you, and then anybody out there would like to call in for some informal chat and some indie music, or wherever it leads us, call in to 424-243-9540. Again, I want to thank my sponsor, Lash Publishing, and my guest, my dear friend, what the heck, Bill Keck. And I'd like to ring him out with this song. And this song is was actually, Bill, and we're going to have to take care of you getting one of my books, but when I found out that I had to make, I didn't make a big video like you, but I made a little book trailer, and this is the first indie musician I met, and she's actually the trailer for my book, which you can find on my website. Oh, you can't find because your computer's broke. Okay, never mind that. But anyway, love you. Going to send you out with this, Bill. And this is called Guardian Angel by Leah West. And you can check that out at leahwest.com, LEAHWEST.com. And again, good night to you, Bill, and Mr. Heck, and anyone else who's leaving, hope the rest of you will stay. This is Guardian Angel. Good night to those that are leaving.